The headlines: the Israeli occupation forces continue their attacks on Al-Shifa Medical Complex in Gaza, killing dozens of civilians. Leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement says international massacres, the intentional massacre of Palestinians, prove the true nature of Israel. And Iran strongly condemns Israel's attacks on Syria as unlawful and provocative. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling continue to claim innocent lives in the besieged territory. The Gaza Health Ministry says over 100 Palestinians lost their lives in Israeli strikes in a matter of 24 hours. Several areas, including Jabalia in the north and Rafah in the south, have come under aerial strike. The death toll from U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza since October 7th is now almost 32,000, most of them women and children. 7,000 more are unaccounted for and feared to be dead under the rubble of their homes. Over 74,000 Gazans have also been injured. The Palestinian Media Office in Gaza has accused Israel of deliberately killing over dozens of patients in Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital. Over the past 4 days, according to the statement, to the Palestinian passed away because they have deprived the medicine while the regime forces have cut off water and electricity to the complex. It said dozens of nurses, doctors, and hospital staff have also been abducted by the Israeli regime. The media office condemned the crimes committed by Israel as well as Washington's support for Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has warned that the attacks against Al-Shifa Hospital have made it impossible for agencies to distribute aid. It has also expressed concern about reports of medical staff being detained. Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza, has been under direct Israeli attacks, raids, and airstrikes since Monday. Our correspondent in Gaza, Muti Abu Musabi, has talked to some of them. Let's take a listen.
Israeli aggression is still persistent against the Al-Shifa Medical Complex and even the surrounding areas of Gaza Strip. As you know, that today is the fourth consecutive day of this brutal aggression. As a result, the Israeli occupation forces kidnapped hundreds of the Palestinian civilians from inside the Al-Shifa Medical Complex, including paramedics and journalists and even civilians of those evacuees who were taking shelter inside the hospital. Actually, according to the latest news from the Al-Shifa Medical Complex, that at least 3 Palestinian patients passed away over the lack of the needed medical care after the Israeli occupation forces kidnapped and abducted the paramedics from the Al-Shifa Medical Complex. While in the surrounding areas, the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking the residential buildings. Fierce air strikes hit the residential buildings over the last couple of hours as the Israeli air strikes targeted and destroyed several residential buildings. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery and the Israeli tanks also maintain shelling the residential apartments in the vicinity of the Shifa Medical Complex. A big fire blazed and engulfed a lot of the Palestinian residential apartments in the area in the vicinity of the Shifa Medical Complex. We are talking about continuous Israeli airstrikes, and the humanitarian conditions are still catastrophic by all means for the Palestinian evacuees who are still stranded and besieged inside the Shifa Medical Complex, or for those who are still located and trapped under the heavy bombardments of the Israeli tanks and the Israeli airstrikes in the vicinity of the Shifa Medical Complex. Many many appeals actually were released by the Palestinian families in order to help them, I mean, for the Red Cross Society and human rights organizations to help them to safeguard, to be safeguarded and to leave the area, because the Israeli shelling is fierce and intense, and it hasn't stopped for a while. We are talking about 4 consecutive months of those continuous Israeli strikes and attacks.
Moving on, the United Nations Satellite Center has released an updated assessment of the damage inflicted on the besieged Gaza Strip. It says 35% of all buildings in Gaza have been damaged. It also said that nearly 90,000 Palestinians have been, homes of the Palestinians have also been destroyed. Around 32,000 have been completely destroyed. The new assessment shows that nearly 20,000 buildings have been damaged in Gaza since the previous assessment in January. Israel's indiscriminate bombing of the besieged territory have resulted in the destruction of hospitals, schools, churches, and civilians' infrastructure. Such destruction of homes and other essential areas has displaced hundreds of thousands of people. Hundreds of human rights organizations say that the destruction appears to be aimed at or to have an effect on rendering a return to civilians in these areas. The United States has already vetoed all the UN Security Council resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire in the war-ravaged Gaza Strip. Now faced with increasing international backlash, its Secretary of State claims that his country is working on with Qatar and Egypt on a ceasefire proposal.
We've been working, as you know, with Egypt, with Qatar, and with Israel to put a strong proposal on the table. Hamas responded to that. The negotiators continue to work. The gaps are narrowing, and we're continuing to push for an agreement in Doha. There's still difficult work to get there, but I continue to believe it's possible.
Biden added that the proposal calls for an immediate ceasefire to pave the way for the release of hostages and get more humanitarian aid into the territory. He was speaking after meetings with a number of Arab foreign ministers in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Blinken will arrive in Israel on Friday as part of his latest West Asia tour. As Israel's main backer, the U.S. has been supporting the regime both financially and militarily since the beginning of its genocide in Gaza. The U.S. resolution will put to vote at the Security Council on Friday. And leaders of 27 European Union countries have called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip to create sustainable ceasefire. The EU leaders made the request in a statement after a meeting of European Council in Brussels. They also urged Israel not to launch its planned ground of operation in Rafah, saying that it would worsen the already catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Strip. They added that a Rafah offensive would also prevent the provisions of basic services and humanitarian assistance to civilians. EU leaders expressed deep concern about the catastrophic situation of children in Gaza and the imminent risk of famine caused by insufficient entry of aid. They called for full, rapid, and unhindered human rights access into Gaza. Now, we are joined by Thea West, a geopolitical analyst, who is joining us from Dallas, Texas. So, Mr. West, in your opinion, how truthful is the U.S. this time around, having vetoed all the ceasefire resolutions so far? What do you think would be the fate of this new one?
Well, the United States, under President Joe Biden, they're not serious about Israel, because if they were serious, they would not be providing them with money, with weaponry, also with military intelligence with which to attack the Palestinians in Gaza. And of course, they would not be vetoing everything in the United Nations Security Council that is geared towards ending this situation in Gaza, which is a situation of mass genocide. Now, many of Netanyahu's people here in the United States, as well as in Israel, they are claiming that there is no moral equivalency. Okay? In other words, what they're saying is that we can harm, we can kill as many Palestinians as we want because of what happened on October the 7th. Now, when the United States says or is talking about a ceasefire, well, Benjamin Netanyahu is saying, we're going to continue to attack Rafah. We're going to send boots on the ground into Rafah. So then you have the European Union. Well, before the European Union, you had a conversation, a meeting with between the Chancellor of Germany and Netanyahu there in Israel. The German Chancellor, Scholz, he got Netanyahu to commit to not going into Rafah with boots on the ground, the military going into Rafah. However, Joe Biden was not able to get Netanyahu to not do that. He was not able to get Netanyahu to promise that he would not do that. Now, I have to say this. Germany is the biggest trade partner of Israel. Germany also provides, gives, not sell, but gives its nuclear war submarines to Israel. So that is an indication that Germany has some leverage with Netanyahu. Now, it would be good if this ceasefire eventually comes into play. I don't have any high hopes that it will, but it would be good if it did come into play. In fact, the United States, Joe Biden indicated that they're going to pay, you know, like over $1 billion to build a pier on the Mediterranean in the Rafah area where the Palestinians can come and get food and other essentials. Now, this is absurd. It should not have to be done. But this is it's an example of the type of grip that Netanyahu and his group of people have upon the American government. And that is not good. It's not good at all. So I personally don't hold out too much hope for a ceasefire of any relevancy, because Netanyahu's goal is to eliminate as many Palestinians, regardless if they're women or children, as he can. And he's trying to do that. He's trying to run out the clock doing that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arthia West, geopolitical analyst, joining us from Texas. A leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement has strongly condemned the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza as purposeful, intentional, and pre-planned. Speaking in a televised address, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said a massacre of Palestinians by the regime's forces attests to the criminal nature of the Zionists. He added that what is happening in Gaza shows that Zionists are a threat to the entire humanity. Al-Houthi also stressed that while Israel uses hunger as a weapon against Gazans, the U.S. has claimed that there is no evidence to prove that. He also said that the ongoing genocide in Gaza shows more decline of the U.S. and serves as a warning regarding the threat it poses to other nations. Al-Houthi affirmed that Israel has failed to achieve any of its goals on the ground despite all of its heinous crimes, touching upon the recent developments in the Gaza Strip, and Al-Houthi said that the U.S. and the U.K. have not only failed to protect Israeli-linked ships, but they have also failed to protect their own vessels. He said that they are now resorting to camouflage tactics to conceal their ships, but their vessels have been detected by Yemeni naval forces. And Yemeni activist and political commentator Hussein al-Bukhaiti joined us earlier. He said Israel has been taken off guard by Yemen's pro-Palestine questions against the occupying regime.
Of course, the Yemeni attack against Israel, it came to a surprise. They did not actually expect that Yemenis, who has been actually under a blockade and siege from the United States and Saudi Arabia and as well United Arab Emirates, who have been under attack, more than 250,000 Saudi airstrike and attack has been conducted against Yemeni. They have destroyed Yemeni economic infrastructure, health infrastructure, and under this blockade, they were really, really surprised that Yemeni actually has the one who have declared clearly the war against Israel by targeting Israeli army bases in south of occupied Palestine. And as well, the next step was to block the ship. And this actually have a direct effect on Israel. We have seen that the latest report from Eilat, that they say the Eilat port has lost about 80-90% of its capacity. So it's almost kind of closed. Even Eilat city has been affected. Shops there and companies and factories has been deeply and strongly affected by those attack from Yemen and by the blockade. That's why they actually have tried now to avoid those attack by either camouflage for their ship and as well by going through around the South Africa. But Yemeni actually is always, they will expand its attack to target Israeli ship either in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden and as well in the Indian Ocean.
And Iran has strongly condemned Israel's frequent attacks on Syria as unlawful and provocative, saying that the regime's strikes only escalate regional tensions and undermine stability. Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations was addressing a Security Council meeting on the situation of Syria. Amir Said Iravani added that the Israeli regime must be held accountable and forced to end such aggressive actions immediately. He also called for an immediate lifting of unilateral sanctions imposed on Damascus. Iravani said unilateral sanctions violate the basic human rights of Syrian people and punishes the entire Syrian population. He added that Iran believes that the Syrian crisis can only be resolved through political means and will continue supporting its government's efforts to restore the country's unity and territorial integrity. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In the United States, former President Donald Trump confused Barack Obama for Joe Biden at a rally in Virginia on Saturday, 2nd of March, triggering further questions about the age of the likely Republican presidential nominee. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to a new poll by the New York Times and Siena College, a majority of voters in the United States believe Joe Biden is just too old to be an effective president. According to the poll's results, 73% of all registered voters believe Joe Biden is too old to be effective, in turn revealing spreading concerns about the 81-year-old president's mental competency. Among those who voted for Biden in 2020, 61% believe Biden's age will make him an ineffective president for a second term, with 26% indicating that they strongly agree and 35% indicating that they somewhat agree. The results of the wide-ranging poll, which were first released on Friday, 1st of March, are the latest blow to Joe Biden's election campaign, which has faced a barrage of criticism centered around Biden's age and widespread voters' fear about his ability to be president. At 81, Biden is the oldest president ever to seek re-election, though his likely challenger Donald Trump is only 4 years younger. However, in much recent polling, Joe Biden is usually trailing to Donald Trump, and he also faces high disapproval ratings. In response to whether Biden's age is such a problem that he's not capable of handling the job of president, 45% of total registered voters agreed in the latest New York Times Siena College study. Among those that voted for Biden 4 years ago, 19% said they agreed with the statement. Meanwhile, across all registered voters, 26% expressed that while Biden's age makes him ineffective, he's still able to handle the job of president well enough. Among those that voted for him in 2020, 41% agreed with the statement. In comparison to Joe Biden, 42% of all registered voters believe Donald Trump is just too old to be an effective president. Among those that voted for Trump in 2020, 5% indicated that they strongly agree, while 9% said they somewhat agree. Across all registered voters, 21% believe that the 77-year-old Donald Trump is ineffective, but he's still able to handle the job of president well enough, while only 19% said they believe Trump's age is such a problem that he's not capable of handling the job. The Business Insider has also covered the same story and tells us more. Donald Trump confused Barack Obama for Joe Biden at a rally in Virginia on Saturday, 2nd of March, triggering further questions about the age of the likely Republican presidential nominee who has made a string of such gaffes. It also comes at a time of similar concerns about Joe Biden. At 77 and 81 respectively, Donald Trump and Joe Biden are the oldest people to run for the presidency in American history. Trump on Saturday night, 2nd of March, in Richmond, Virginia, said, "Putin has so little respect for Obama that he's starting to throw around a nuclear word." You heard that, nuclear. He's starting to talk nuclear weapons today. The crowd reportedly went silent as Donald Trump referenced Barack Obama, who left office more than 7 years ago. It's the third time that Donald Trump has made the blunder in the past 6 months. The former U.S. president's other gaffes include confusing his Republican rival Nikki Haley with former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Nikki Haley, 52 years old, who has defied Trump and several primary defeats to continue in the race for the Republican nomination, has tried to frame herself as the younger, healthier option, referring to Donald Trump and Joe Biden as grumpy old men in her campaign advertisements. Trump's mistake came the day after Joe Biden twice confused Ukraine and Gaza as he announced that the U.S. would airdrop humanitarian supplies to Palestinians in Gaza who are dying of starvation due to the Israeli bombardment of the territory. Joe Biden said on Friday, 1st of March, "In the coming days, we're going to join with our friends in Jordan and others who are providing airdrops of additional food and supplies into Ukraine." He added that the United States will seek to open up other avenues into Ukraine, including possibly a marine corridor. A White House official later clarified that Joe Biden meant Gaza and not Ukraine. The gaffe had been changed in the transcript of his remarks. Questions about Biden's age have intensified in recent months. The latest lapse came just days after he was declared fit for duty at his annual health check. White House physician Dr. Kevin O'Connor said Joe Biden fully executes all of his responsibilities without any exemptions or accommodations. A New York Times Siena College opinion poll found that 73% of registered voters polled believed that Joe Biden is simply too old to be an effective president, including 61% of those who voted for him in 2020. Voters seem less bothered about Donald Trump, who is just 4 years younger, with 42% of those polled saying Trump is just too old to be an effective president. While criticisms of the age issue on both sides are laced with political spin, age-related cognitive decline is real. As a person gets older, changes occur in all parts of the body, including the brain. According to the National Institute on Aging, certain parts of the brain shrink, including those important to learning and other complex mental activities. Communication between neurons becomes less effective, and blood flow in the brain may decrease. Healthy, older adults can, however, learn new skills, form new memories, improve vocabulary and language skills. The National Institute on Aging is conducting research on so-called cognitive superagers, the minority of octogenarians and nanogenarians, whose memories are comparable to people 20 to 30 years younger.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special,
There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Thank you very much for joining us in today's episode of Muslim Lady. Well, this is Asma, your host. Once more, I have the pleasure to be in this studio, and here with me, I have Sister Rehana. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Assalamu alaikum to our dear listeners. I'm very happy to be here, and of course, Ramadan Kareem to all of my
yes, of course. Muslim Thank friends you for all over the world. So that's very amazing. Ramadan Kareem to you and to everyone who's listening to us, and especially to the Muslim ladies. I think when the holy month of Ramadan comes, all the mothers and all the Muslim ladies are going to go through too much. Whatever they do is going to be doubled up. So before we get into our discussion, I just want you to introduce yourself very much briefly for those who still are not familiar with you.
I'm Rehana Paisapar, and I'm an Islamic researcher, especially on women's issues in today's age. And I am also a mother.
Ah, that's very amazing. So, Muslim ladies, we are going to continue with the subject of divorce. Actually, previously, we talked about the reasons and the factors that might lead a path to divorce, a couple life into divorce and separation. So what were the reasons? One of the very most important of them was the loss of attraction. Like, they come out of this honeymoon phase and they would lose that spark that you mentioned. Like, okay, we no longer have that thing that relates us to each other. Like, there's no more of attraction. When we are together, I do not feel anything toward him. This was one of the reasons. Another one was the fact that they do not spend quality time with each other. They did not interact and communicate with each other perfectly. They did not devote special time for that. And the other factor was some sort of external factor, like one of the couples, one of the members in this holy institution of family gets to be attracted to somewhere else, like they would chase their happiness somewhere else, which is actually something that is that must be looked at from a sociological perspective. Like, we as members of society have responsibility toward each other. Like, when we say the importance of hijab is something that would help the family, we mean this exactly. So now, aside from all of these things that we mentioned as factors, now you tell us if there's any other factors that, of course, there are a huge list of factors out there. But just since we have a limited time, let's see what's more to be added in order to get into the solution.
Thank you for that recap, Sister Asma. But before I move on to the next factor that is effective, I would like to mention that Islam has a high regard for the institution of marriage. It actually gives a lot of opportunities for a couple to become closer to one another through giving rewards. It gives rewards for various things that can help the couple have that attraction.
And strengthen their bond.
Yes, strengthen that attraction, strengthen their bond. And for instance, we can mention that Allah has set a reward for when a man and a woman, like a husband and a wife, I mean, look into each other's eyes lovingly. Even for that small, very small act, Allah has set a reward. And the reason for that, we must assume, is that how effective it can be in rekindling that spark and for maintaining that attraction.
Reawaken that spark.
Yes. And another thing is that there are rewards for when, for example, a wife creates a situation where the husband and wife can spend some quality time with each other. So as you might have experienced before, I mean, dear listeners have experienced before, maybe. Sometimes men are just not that attentive. They forget that they have to spend, they have to stop for a second, spend some quality time with the family. They just have so much on their mind. And I guess Allah has somehow not given the responsibility of it to women, but has understood that women have more of this power to create the situation.
Well, now here, just for the record, we have to mention something, but then let's go for a break and then we'll be back and I would bring that up. Well, welcome back. This is Muslim Ladies. Sister Rehana and I were talking about ladies, staff, but then we came to the issue of divorce, and I already gave you an introduction. Then Sister Rehana was just mentioning some ways, some solutions for how to reawaken that spark and how to regain that attention that we have for each other, as I mean in the institution of family and in marriage for couples. Women are more passionate, they're kinder, and this is pretty much clear.
They think about these stuff more as
And they care about emotion. They are the faculty of emotion and feeling. And by the way, I'm not saying that they do not think. They have both and they can moderate. But then there comes this issue that we've been talking about many times in Muslim Lady. You're saying that men, when they come to home, they're not attentive because they're tired, because they have had enough in their plates, and that's very right. But then unfortunately, as a result of the problems of this today's world, let's say, a lot of women are spending a lot of their time outside the home, just like the man. So when they come home, they again are not attentive. They again wish someone else to take care of them. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, yes. They would feel like, okay, it's his responsibility. Like, it's not me, the only one who's responsible. Like, I have had enough, just like him. Okay, but you are just breaking the cycle. You're just... I don't know how to say it. You know, I do not say that women should not work or should not attend extra activities outside the home.
No,
but
of course not.
All what I mean is that when we change the directions, the natural direction and cycle of everything in this world, things are going to get ruined, like the relationship between family. Another important factor which is going to lead to divorce is the fact that neither of them, not men, nor the woman, are going to get enough of their relationship because they're tired.
Responsibilities of the world.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you mentioned it. But the thing is that I presumed a situation which is ideal in Islam.
Yeah, that's ideal of Islam. I understand. Yes. That's why I brought it up.
That is a very good
point.
When
the woman is actually doing her job and doing her responsibility as a mother and as a wife, though, I say it, we are not saying that women should not work, women should not have any extra activities outside the home. No, we just say that it's not women's responsibility to bring money.
Yes.
That's the thing that Islam says. Islam actually respects women more than just money maker sort of creatures. I usually call mothers as artists, because a great mother is going to paint some beautiful canvases of human beings and personalities.
We have a narration that says, "Al-mar'atu rayhana wa laysat biqahrimana." So I believe that this
What is the translation of it? Just for those who do not know Arabic.
Yes, it means that women are like flowers. They aren't heroes. And what I believe the word hero entails is women having it all, doing everything, working outside the home, doing hard labor to earn money, and also having the responsibilities of the house, because we all know that the major responsibility of child rearing falls on the shoulders of women. I think that it's really important. That is another thing that about the basic principles of Islam when it comes to the family unit. So,
and of course, we have Lady Fatima al-Zahra as the role model. I mean, just look at her. Yes, she had some gatherings. She had meetings in which she would clarify religious stuff and philosophical issues to other women. But then she was not doing a lot of jobs outside the home. Like, she was the mother to kids whose destiny changed the destiny of human beings. But then she was this flower that you were just talking about.
Yeah, so it is important to understand and to really consider the responsibilities of a woman in the family. When a woman gets married, consequently means that she has accepted all of the responsibilities that comes along with marriage.
Exactly.
So having a job and earning money is not a part of those responsibilities. So it's not on the shoulders of the woman to earn the money. So this
means... unfortunately, again, I have to interrupt you, but before I just point out what I'm going to say, let's go for a break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back and thank you for staying with us, Muslim ladies. Yes, there was a point I just wanted to bring out. Just as you said, women are not meant to make money. I mean, the responsibility is not on their shoulders. It's the men who are meant to be the money makers and to provide the facilities for life. Unfortunately, there is this case in which I've heard about, and I was I was just shocked. Like, the man who was searching for a woman to marry, one of his criterion was for the woman to be working. And then why? What is his justification? Is the fact that, okay, life is difficult. Me alone am not going to be able to afford all the money is needed for a life.
Oh my God, that is so unattractive.
See what women have done to themselves. Like, you bring yourself into a position in which to be a working woman becomes a criterion for your decisions for life.
That is basically telling your wife that I want you to work and to earn money for us.
Like, I'm counting on you to afford money for me.
Oh, that is very...
And this very idea was something I have never heard about. Like, when I heard, I was just so shocked. But unfortunately, when I come to see reality in the world, I see that, yes, this has been one of the factors. Like, a woman who's working outside the home, like a girl who's been achieving a lot of things, like she can make a perfect amount of money, is more acceptable by other men. Why? Okay, think about it just.
Yeah, that is... a result of men and women forgetting their responsibilities
and their roles.
Yes, and buying into these feminist movements that, when you think about it, actually benefit men rather than women.
Yeah, that's the point.
To be perfectly honest. So one of the important reasons that people mention, one of the common reasons that people mention when getting a divorce is lack of attraction and losing the spark. And that could be because of men and women forgetting their roles, their actual roles and responsibilities in a marriage, and creating these false goals and their own criteria and responsibilities that aren't even true.
And the traps of the slogans. A lot of movements are out there speaking of the right of women and this and that. All of these things would mislead men and women, even in their relationships as couples.
Yeah, so it is a important topic, and inshallah, we'll delve deeper into it into other episodes.
Exactly, yeah. So since it is a topic that has got a lot of other chains getting into it, like it's an interlaced issue, when you talk about divorce, a lot of factors come from different dimensions of individual and social life. So things are related to each other, and it gets into new roads and new paths. That's why sometimes we get to talk about other factors by detail. So thank you, Sister Rehane. And thank you to our listeners. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and it comes fruitful. So thank you. Until another session, I leave you to God's never sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulema, that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the 10th episode of the Ramadan special series, we are going to speak about sensitivity towards sin, indecency and evil deeds with a look at Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah of the Noble Quran. Stay with us, please. Among the characteristics that God likes very much, and every faithful should have it, is غيرات, which means sensitivity towards evil and sin. According to a hadith, God likes qayrat among the faithful. Qayrat means strong defense of dignity, face, family, religion, property, and country. This sensitivity acts like a vigilant police in the spirit of human being, guarding red lines and boundaries. It urges us to be alert against evil acts and sin. A hadith from the Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, reads, Allah assigned two angels to punish a city. The people of the city were very rude and immoral. They felt no regret for their sins and did not give up their evil deeds. Allah sent them to raise the city to the ground. They saw a worshipper among the people who was praying, crying, and supplicating. One of the angels told the other, Let us go and ask him again. The other angel said, Do your duty. The first one said, Perhaps. The command has changed as the man may have repented. Wait so that I ask for our duty again. So that angel went back and asked Allah, as he had seen a worshipper among the people. Allah said, The duty is the same. Go to the city and destroy it. Then Allah added, It is true that this man is engaged in worship and prayer, but he is never upset and angry with the sin of others, and this respect to the divine laws, and his face didn't change. He has no religious sensitivity. The sensitivity of persons towards belief and religion is inevitable. The deeper is one's belief in his religion, the more sensitive he will be toward religion. The opposite of religious sensitivity is compromise and coming short on religious red lines and principles. This is called pliability and indifference. A sensitive person cannot tolerate insulting of divine laws, principles, and sanctities. When God obligates something, he wants it to be done. As we said in the beginning of this episode, Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah is somehow related to this issue. Nor is there any blame on those to whom, when they came to you to provide them with a mount, you said, I do not find any mount for you. They turned back while their eyes were flowing with tears, grieved because they did not find any means to spend. Those faithful had no means for jihad, but religious sensitivity made them very upset and they cried in grief. Today some people insist on ignoring of religious values and principles, saying, In the modern time, we shouldn't be sensitive and rigid towards values. We should endure all tastes, ideas, and behaviors and give them chance to show themselves. The pliable people think that if person does an indecent act in public, insults sanctities, writes profanities, we should not react. They argue that not everybody thinks the same in society and everyone have their own idea. So, if we want to live comfortably, we have to tolerate them. They even attribute their justification to some Quranic ayahs. For instance, they mention Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah, part of which reads, Allah desires ease for you, and He does not desire hardship for you. They also resort to Ayah 21 of Surah Al-Ghashiyah, so admonish for you are only an admonisher. But these people should be asked as what is their opinion on Ayah 19 of Surah Ali Imran, part of which reads, Indeed, with Allah, religion is Islam. Or, what do they think about Ayah 73 of Surah Toba, part of which reads, O Prophet, wage jihad against the faithless and the hypocrites and be severe with them. We should not forget that tolerance and taking easy of religious laws not only is accepted, but also it is the origin of religion. And if taking easy means to spread Islam through argument and logical debate, it is correct. Yet, one cannot come short and be indifferent against affront towards religious values. We read in history that a delegation came to the Prophet and told him, We will pay allegiance to you with three conditions. We will not perform daily ritual prayer. We will not break our idols ourselves. And let the idol Lot to remain for 1 year so that we can worship it. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, There is no use in the religion that has no bowing and prostration. As for breaking of your idols, if you don't want to break them, we will break them. But on worshipping of Lot, I will never give you such a permission. Sure, the Prophet stood firmly against their excessive and illogical demands and rejected them. It has also been narrated on the revelation of Surah Kafirun that chiefs of polytheists came up to the Prophet and told him, O Muhammad, you obey your religion so that we obey yours and make you our partner in all our privileges. You worship our deities for 1 year and the following year we will worship your God. The Messenger of Mercy told them, I take refuge with God that I may ascribe and associate to Him. Then the Prophet came to the sacred mosque after the revelation of this surah and told the chiefs of polytheists, O you the faithless, I will never worship what you worship.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.